Welcome to Shh, We're Reading Dirty Books. This is Kalina.
And this is Saylet. And with us today, we have a very special guest. If you guys remember from a couple of our Shh, We're Talking Fantasy Football episodes, we had Peter on here, or on there. And he helped me replace Kalina a couple of times when she wasn't there. So today, we have him as our guest. Say hi, Peter.
Hey, how's it going?
So, yay.
Yeah, so what we had was we had Peter read this next book with us.
So this is
podcast. Also that. What is this?
What is it? It's a podcast. It's a paranormal romance podcast where we read a book every 2 weeks and then discuss. So yes, this week, the book. The book and other things. A lot of other things sometimes.
Mainly other things.
Sometimes the book.
Sometimes.
But anyway. So yes, this week. Peter read the book with us, and we have him to join us for our discussion.
Yeah, so it's going to be really cool to get, like, a, I just, like, yelled, yeah. I'm the only one wearing headphones right now, so that was really intense. Sorry. So it's going to be really good to get an outsider who is reading the books with us, so hopefully you guys are doing that out there as well, but to also join us in the discussion, and also from a man's point of view. So this is going to be really good. And if you guys don't remember, Peter is my brother-in-law, so he is my husband's little brother. Little big brother.
He's not younger brother.
Younger brother. So we're excited to have him on.
Kalina's probably going to want to hit me for saying this. This popped my romance novel cherry because I've never read one before. So yeah, no, it was interesting just to get into that whole world. So
that's cool. Yeah, I mean, right away I was just like, I can't remember who it was between you and I who was like, hey, if you ever want me on the show, or hey, do you ever want to be on the show? Let me know. I'll read the book. And I was like, fuck yeah,
yeah, I think it'll be great.
Awesome. Yeah.
So. We read How to Flirt with a Naked Werewolf by Molly Harper and narrated by Amanda Ronconi. Are we doing Clitz Notes first?
Let's do Clitz Notes.
Okay. So How to Flirt with a Naked Werewolf is the story of Mo and Cooper. Mo is a Southern belle who is tired of her family, the hippy-dippy commune she grew up on, and decides she has to run away. So she drives from Mississippi to Alaska.
I know.
She just like up and moves one night without telling anyone. Moves to this small town, Grundy, Alaska, with, you know, very few people, and immediately tries to fit into the community, meets a bunch of characters, and eventually a man named Cooper.
What?
Who might or may not be a werewolf.
You never know. You never know.
And then the rest of the story is their beautiful budding romance. And also some wolves. And people die. But then, you know, they it's fun. That's not really what the story is about.
Hands down, probably the best Clitz Notes you've ever done. That was awesome. It only took, you know, however many episodes.
30 episodes to figure it out.
So, to kick this off, before we go into full discussion, we're just gonna, it's not gonna be interview, it's not gonna be proper, I mean, Pete's known me for, you were 13, right?
Yeah, so 17 years.
Yeah, there's nothing proper about me. So, so we're just gonna do it like we normally do with a third person. So he's just gonna be one of us. What? No? What?
Oh, like we normally do, but with a third person. I thought you said like we normally do with a third person. I was like, we've never had a third person before, so this isn't normal. I understand now.
Yes.
I get it. I picked it up. There
you go. And I was like, what do you mean? But to kick it off, we've got some questions for you.
Shoot.
And you got to answer these on the fly.
Joy. These are going to be fun.
Yeah, they are. All right. So number one. Do you growl at other men who get too close to your mate?
No, I've never. That would be really weird. I mean, I don't know anybody who would actually find that intimidating. Just like, what the fuck?
What's wrong with that asshole? He's fucking growling.
Yeah, right?
Okay. Would you ever consider yourself alpha of your flock?
Yes. I wouldn't say it's a necessity, but somebody has to try to herd the cats.
Sure.
That are
flock of
that
cats.
Are the yeah. the family that I have. So
right on, right on. Do you draw blood when you... Why did I write this question down? Okay. This is stupid. I don't want to ask this question.
Now you have to.
I have to now. I don't know. I was ambitious, I guess. Do you draw blood when you bite during the claiming ritual?
Isn't it a necessity?
No. A.K.A. just during fucking.
No. It does remind me of a story of a time when I almost lost my virginity.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm remembering stories. But anyway.
I've got PTSD.
Yeah, right? God. But it was the first time when I almost lost my virginity. It didn't happen because I didn't have a condom because... I was like,
smart boy,
15 or 16, and I was not about to have a kid.
I'm so proud of you.
But well, and then my daughter happened, so you know, my knowledge just regressed real quick.
You're like,
but we were making out, and she was a biter. Like she like bit the lip, but she did it way too hard.
Yeah,
all the time. Like it was like that was just like her thing for whatever reason. I don't know. I remember I pulled away for something and she had smiled after we just got done making out. She bit my lip. I had pulled away and she had a streak of blood across her top teeth.
Holy shit.
And I was like, okay. I didn't say anything. I just left it alone. And I was just like, man, that was fucking weird.
Oh, dear.
And then I think I ran, like, we went to school together and I ran into her, I think a day or two later. And I was like, hey, you might want to chill out with the biting. And she was like, why? I was like, I didn't want to say anything. Like, we were in the moment. So I was just kind of rolling with it. But remember when I, like, pulled away for something? She was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, you had a strip of blood, of my blood across your teeth. She was like, holy shit. I'm so glad you didn't say anything right then and there. It would have ruined it.
You have a little bit of my DNA in you, and it wasn't the one you thought was going to be.
Yeah, right?
Did you investigate her for vampirism?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
there's a high probability that she might be a fledgling vampire.
It would not surprise me, because that shit hurt.
Yeah. Yes. Last silly question, and then I have a real serious question.
Uh-oh.
This is stupid. I don't know why I even said that because I don't want to read the question again. Do you mark your territory by peeing on things?
Out in the woods, totally.
In other words, are you a fucking werewolf?
Are you a werewolf, Peter?
Might be.
Okay,
that's all.
You're very bushy.
You are. Okay, so you mentioned before that you haven't read this type of book before. Do you just mean romance novel? Have you read paranormal?
I mean, if you consider, like, Game of Thrones books paranormal, I would consider just that fantasy. More, like,
that's fantasy.
But, yeah, no, I don't think I've ever read a paranormal book, or have I never read a romance novel.
Okay. Cool. This is gonna be fun. This one was a little bit tame. We wanted something a little bit fun that we thought was gonna be real funny and just kind of easygoing and cool so we could have a nice, fun conversation around it. So the sex in this book was just really, really calm. And, I mean, you probably wouldn't have thought so because you were like, oh, I don't normally hear this in my ear.
Well, so kind of piggybacking on what you were saying a little bit, I did find it interesting just the way she was describing everything or the way that she wrote, you know, like his length or my core or this and that and the other. And I was like, that's... I mean, I get what they're saying, but I'm like, there could have been a numerous different amount of ways that they could have said it to make it more, like, poignant, I guess.
This was definitely more tame than any of the other, well, not any, but a lot of the other books that we recorded. None at all. You know?
Anyway.
Well, so that's cool. So that's, what I really was going after was something not as aggressive. I do think this is a good book to start with if you haven't had that type of talk in your ear, because we audibled this, obviously.
Right.
But we get some pretty hardcore shit.
Some of our stuff is. Mm-hmm. Very much like, so.
Yeah.
Like, you know, audio porn.
Yes.
That's what I call it.
That's exactly what it is. And if you have a vivid imagination, like me, or, you know, because I live in my head constantly, it's good shit. It's good shit.
I totally agree too, that this is the good, this would be a good introduction one, especially for somebody who, because I know on like earlier podcasts you guys have talked about like part of this is like kind of like being comfortable with being able to talk about it, or like, you know, you do romance novels and stuff like that, and if somebody who is always shied away from them, they're like, oh, why would you do that? Like, this is the perfect one to just get them jumped in with it and just say, look, just listen to this, see if you like it, you know, go with that, because that's kind of the real easy just step into it.
Yeah.
I agree. I think it's one, it's kind of like Training Wheels. Mm-hmm. This is a Training Wheels romance novel. Because it doesn't have, especially for our genre of paranormal, there isn't a whole lot of really out there paranormal world building that has to go on. So no one's like spending a lot of time describing how the different kinds of vampires came to be, and this group of vampires fights this group of vampires. Like, that really gets in the weeds and some people can get lost in that. This was just the world as is. Oh, guess what? There's werewolves, and we don't need to really go into it. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think that's good, you know, for paranormal. And then also, there isn't the real intense, fated, rough for all eternity, this is what we're meant to do kind of stuff that can come in some of, many of the other paranormals we read, many of the other books we've read, where it's like destined mating forever and life, and it's real intense. And this is a much, like, more just fiction story, like, about people, where, oh, yeah, there happens to be werewolves. And the real driving factor of the story is these two getting together.
Yeah, yeah.
There isn't, you know, a whole lot more, but that's fine. It's still a fun story. Like, the characters are quirky. The town is interesting. It's well-described. It's well-developed. And we just spend a lot of time meeting these people and learning how they interact with each other and, you know, watching that. And it's, you know, it's a good, like you said, entry level Training Wheels type romance.
That's a perfect way to say it. All of, not all of, but a lot of the ones that we have read before, they all have that fated mate trope. Oh. In some of the other books that we've read, they always have this, is this person the one? Because it's like, you find the one and you're stuck with them for eternity. And this one doesn't have it. This one has a real person, except they're a werewolf's element.
Yeah.
It takes away that whole, even like when you're growing up, you get that whole, there's a soulmate or there's the one for me or whatever. And I feel like what you guys are saying is there are a lot of romance novels who play hard on that trope, whether it's like,
they take there's it that seriously. Distance.
Yeah, yeah. And this one, totally, it's not even like the, he's the one for me. I mean, literally, she's like this at the very beginning. She's like, this guy is an asshole. Like, I can't stand this dude. Uh-huh. And then it just kind of happens to come together. So,
yeah.
The other thing I think for me too, like, there's some books that I've read or listened to in the past where, to me anyway, it's annoying to have, like, let's say 3 to 4 chapters worth of nothing but just describing things.
World building.
Right. And it's, the way that she does it is, she kind of builds the world over a couple of different chapters while intertwining all the story and everything, to where it doesn't feel like you're like, holy shit, that was an entire 3 chapters of just describing the, like, filigree on a wall type thing. The shit that nobody cares about, in my opinion. But
what I call Tolkienism.
Yeah,
I was just going to say, that's the reason why I can't read those books. I just can't do it.
Because he's good at it, but it's too much. Like, when they turn the books into movies, that's what I needed. Because I was like, okay, now I can just see the world. I don't have to hear the fucking words described at me for fucking 700 pages.
I get lost in those kind of words and disinterested.
I think I've said it on the podcast before, maybe not, but I feel like for readers, and it's not going to be universal, everyone reads differently and everyone has a different you know, stuff that they like when they're reading, but for me, you aren't leaving enough up to me to you're trying to dictate my imagery, like the what I picture in my head too much. So now I'm lost, because I'm like, wait, he said that the tree looked like this, and then there was this kind of branch and these kind of leaves and this, and now I'm trying real hard to make sure I picture exactly those things that you're saying, instead of just saying it was a, you know, emerald forest, and like then letting me picture whatever, you know, lush emerald forest I want to picture instead of like specific described trees. So I think at some point, and authors are different and readers are different, but I prefer if my author lets me use my imagination. That's, we talk about it all the time. Which, you know, which person did you picture? You tend to picture famous people a lot for cartoons for our characters, whereas I don't have something I can describe, because I think they're a lot more like amorphous in my head. I like, I take some of the, you know, whatever the descriptions are in the book, and I couldn't draw them. I couldn't really tell you what they look like, because I don't necessarily image things. Like, you know, I don't see it. I'm hearing it. And so that's it's audio to me, and it's not as imagery. So, that, yeah, when books get too bogged down in the details, I think you're taking away your reader's experience.
Yeah, so. I mean, like, if you want to just tell me that there's you were in a two-bedroom apartment and the walls are green, like, great. I can do the rest.
Yep. Don't need every piece of furniture.
Unless it's pertinent to the actual story.
But yeah, it better be damn pertinent, like, if you're going to spend a paragraph describing a couch.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I better need to know why that couch looks that way.
There's a hidden box underneath the
it's going to come back later.
Like,
in this drama.
Exactly.
So, no, I think that was good, and Molly did a good job. I loved the town of Grundy.
I want to
live there.
Visit there. I want to go to Alaska so bad.
So this is our second book in Alaska, mm-hmm. and I really have decided now I just think I should live in Alaska.
We should just go. Sure.
Now the question is, do you think if you were to just run away and go to a small town in Alaska, tying it back into the book, treat you the same way that others got treated as far as who the hell are you, why are you here, and who do you think you are?
You would say, look, bitch, I'm from Denver, Colorado. And be like, oh, you have snow there. Yeah. You understand what cold means.
Well, and I lived in Finland for a year. I have cred.
That's true.
Like, I have my snow cred.
Ohio.
Like, I don't get scared by it. No, I think that description of a small town, like any small town probably, seems pretty, I mean, we're from a city, so it's hard to say. Right. But even, like, I go back and visit family in small town Ohio, and they know each other, and they know people who aren't part of the town. Mm-hmm. It is, like, you know, and they aren't mean or anything, but there's just something about being a local and being not a local. So I'm sure that in Alaska you'd get some of that, especially in a smaller, more rural area.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even talking about that, like one of the parts in the book they were talking about,
jump all around.
Yep, sweet. That's what we
do. When she got pregnant, she didn't want anybody in the town to know because she knew that by the end of the week, everybody would be talking about her. By the end of that day, everybody would be talking about it. And when she was talking about that, I remembered a story that my mom used to tell, that the one time she decided to ditch high school in that small Towerington, Wyoming, it beat her home. Like, she got home from ditching and her parents knew that she didn't go to school.
Yep.
Like, that's small just town crazy mentality. Small town. Yep.
Yeah, that shit.
I remember that story.
Yeah, they're close-knit. Gossip is lifeblood for small towns. Like, that is, like, especially, you know, rural Alaska, where they're like, we got nothing else to talk about all winter except each other. So tell me what's going on with you. Yeah, so, no, I imagine. But I think she showed them all and fit in pretty well. Like, they all embraced her by the... I mean, she could cook, so...
I mean, everybody but her love interest.
Well, Cooper has issues. But yeah, so... I mean, a couple things we wanted to talk about. Like, I thought one particular scene that I think was written really well and, like, exemplified women's life, not all women's, but, like, some of the perils we face, is she is closing up. She's working at a bar, and she locks it. She has to close one night. Mm-hmm. She's by herself. There'd been a trucker in, kind of, like, hanging out and talking to her, who she was getting a weird vibe off of. She didn't really like very much. But one of the... regular patrons stayed and walked her to her car, but then she realized she needed to take the trash out because it was like oyster stew or something, and she didn't want to leave it in all night. So she goes back into the bar alone to take, you know, to get the trash and take it out. And as she's locking up, this trucker walks up behind her and says, like, this big long story about how he needs his hat and he left his hat on the bar, and she knows it's not in there. She didn't see the hat.
Yeah.
She closed and wiped down the bar. She knows there's no hat there. But he's adamant, and he's trying to get her to let him back into the bar, and just, oh, let's just go inside, we'll look for the hat. And she's like, no, I really can't, I'm not allowed. And he's like, well, don't be rude, I'm not asking you for a huge favor. And in her head, she immediately starts going, oh, I am being rude.
Yeah.
I really, this is rude of me not to let him in, he just needs his hat. And then he attacks her and almost kills her. Like, it's the speed with which, you know, women are like, oh, I don't want to be seen as rude. So she lets her guard down a half a second in order to, like, not be called rude and is attacked. So that is just, you know, so many times we're told that we're being rude and then we change the way we behave, or you change the way you behave because you don't want to come off that way.
Right.
And it's
important. And then you find yourself in a precarious situation like this, and then you're battling with yourself and what you've been taught to do and what your instincts are telling you to do.
Yeah. And her instincts were like, go, run.
Yeah.
And society has taught her to be nice and placate him. Mm-hmm. And it's, no, don't do that. just go hit him if you have to and run. And if it is innocent, if he really just needed his hat, then you can apologize right. later if he says anything about it. And be like, sorry, you scared me and I needed to run away. Yeah. Like, that's, it's much better to apologize after the fact than it is to be...
Sorry, you frightened me and yeah. I felt like I needed to protect myself from you.
Well, and even on that same, like, note, if it's such a small town, obviously everybody, this is thinking hindsight, obviously in the moment, that probably wasn't things that were going through her head. But... if it's such a small town and everybody knows each other, he's obviously would be like, you would think, okay, he's a local. Maybe I don't know him yet, but he's probably a local. They probably know who he is. There's no reason why he couldn't come back tomorrow and get his hat.
Exactly.
The fact of just getting lulled into that sense of letting the guard down for that 1 second, it's like, there's not a need for it, especially because it's, if you're a local, you know where it is. You can come back tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Oh, I found a hat. I know whose it is. Like, it's yeah. not, like, you yeah, know, exactly. you're not in a big, like, Denver city area where it's like, I'm never seeing that person again type deal. So,
and it's a hat.
Yeah.
So my other instinct is like, you live in Alaska, do you not have other hats? If you don't, that's on you, and you can just suffer tonight and then get your hat tomorrow.
You really, like, it's just really not on me
to make sure that you A, have all your possessions, and B, are okay. Like, you need to take care of yourself, and if you can't, then, you know, I don't have to fix this for you. Like, that's the other thing. Like, women want to fix things a lot, you know? And it's, no, you don't have to fix this for him.
Yeah, like,
tell him to go away, get in your car, and leave.
The bathroom now.
I know, because it took another woman moving into this place, using the other bathroom, which I never, ever used, to go, hey, guess what a bathroom should have?
Toilet paper.
Towels. Soap. You know, things.
That's so funny.
That's what's in the bathroom now. But anyway. So,
I'm curious, Peter, because, I mean, as women growing up, and obviously I grew up biculturally, but I was still always taught, one, to respect your elders, and two, to be polite, to be nice. Mm-hmm. You know, you always have your guard up as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
What lesson was taught to you in that sense, you know, growing up in...
I think, I mean, the biggest thing that, obviously it was my mom who always tried to instill that, you know, she was always with us.
Yeah.
Just don't be a shitty person. Like, sure. that's literally like what she preached to all of her kids was, just don't be a shitty person. She lived by the golden rule all the time of, you know, treat people how you want to be treated. And so if you stepped out of line, I mean, there was discipline to be had, you know, but I mean, that was a thing. It was never a... You can't, I mean, there definitely was part of that where it was never like a, don't be rude to somebody for if they're being rude. Like, there wasn't that beaten, like, ingrained of, oh, I shouldn't be rude to this, that, and the other. Like, my mom was not afraid that if you were overstepping your bounds, you heard it. Like, there was no, you know, but it was, where am I going with this? Choo-choo has just went. but it was always one of those things where it was just, don't be a shitty person, but... also understand, there was a little bit too of like understanding your audience that she kind of always instilled with us too is, I mean, you know, as well as anybody else, like if me or any of my siblings really wanted to go at somebody, there's a lot of mean things that could be said that get under people's skin real quick.
Sure.
But there's just, you have to understand your audience. You didn't want to be a shitty person. And then there was something else I was going to say, but it's gone. So bye.
No, I think that's an important theme. Were you also taught to, what am I trying to say? So like for me, and I don't know if it's the same for Kalina, but I have been told, be cautious because you're a girl. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's ever been, like, obviously right now in this moment in time, no one's going to walk up to a 6'2" dude with a red big old beard. Right. And, you know, like, right. Kalina doesn't have to walk me to my car tonight. You're here. Like, you know what I mean?
Right. Stay home.
It's a different thing. Like, is that something that was ever taught to you, or was it just, it never was because you didn't have to because you were a boy?
No, and in all honesty, I think it was because my mom was raised on a farm, you know, like, granted, it wasn't like a major farm, but that was farm life. You didn't have that option of, you're a girl, so you can't do this. No, you get your ass up, you're doing stuff. Yeah. So, and that was the same way across all three of us. Like, if she asked us to do something, it was expected. There was no favoritism based off of, well, I mean, I was favored because I was the baby, let's just be honest. But,
yes, I know.
but like, you know, my mom would never not tell my sister to do something because she was a girl, or that the boys had to do this or whatever. It was just, hey, get it done. Okay.
You're a bad guest to have on. Your parents are level-headed.
Well, one of them.
Your mama was.
And, like, yes, I agree with all of that. But I also think a lot of these lessons are societal.
Yeah,
so that's regardless, because at no point was it vocalized in my house that this isn't for girls and this mm-hmm. is for boys or anything like that. But so much is what you see in all media and that's on TV true. And mm-hmm. in magazines and just shit that is coming at you day after day. Socially, like, you know, the way you play as children, the toys you receive, even if it's subconsciously, there's just so much culturally that leads you down these paths.
Even peers, too. Like,
yeah.
my daughter, she was total, like, tomboy, loved playing in the mud, was fascinated with bugs. Like, it was awesome. First day of school, all of it changed. Super girly girl, and she gets grossed out by everything. So then, me being who I am, I try to do things that I know will gross her out on purpose, just because I'm like, look, girl, you're gonna have to get used to a lot of this stuff in life, so yeah. Let's just desensitize you now.
Exactly. You start to mimic your peers because you yeah. want to be like the crowd. You don't want to be, especially when you're that little,
right.
the peer pressure and the like herd mentality is, you know, they pick off the odd ones. So you don't yeah. want to be mm-hmm. an odd one.
Yeah.
You want to kind of go with,
yeah.
with the group. And it sucks because there's so much from so young mm-hmm. and we're still like we're just starting to scratch the surface of a lot of these societal gender norms and how to break them, and so that we start giving kids just like be yourself regardless just
be a kid
of mm-hmm. you know what gender or sex mm-hmm. you are like mm-hmm. just you know pick what makes you happy, and if it doesn't hurt other people then be that and right. enjoy that, and don't let society tell you that you have to smile and be kind and don't be rude, you right. know, because then you're being a bitch and no one right. likes women who are bitches, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that mm-hmm. I appreciated that one. It's a very small scene, but that scene in this book for what it yeah. was is, you know, and she punched the guy in the nose, and luckily Cooper as a wolf showed up and killed the guy, basically.
Yeah.
So she survived it and, you know, learned from it and everything. But it was just an interesting tableau of, you know, he said all the right things that trigger you into going, oh, am I yeah, not no, doing he, what I societally should, was, you know?
He was a true predator. He knew exactly what he was.
Yeah.
Was doing and trying to aim for.
Some of the other, you know, something else that was new in this book that we have not encountered before is Mo kind of had a boyfriend, like a rival suitor. She was being courted by multiple yes. people in the book and mm-hmm. kind of dated the guy named Alan, the park ranger.
Mm-hmm.
Alan, for a little bit. This is back when she and Cooper weren't really talking. Cooper was an asshole. And so we kind of got to witness her work out, like, you know, does she like Alan? They're going mm-hmm. on dates, but she doesn't really feel
she's
anything.
She's not feeling it with him.
She's like a good friend or mm-hmm. brother, but nothing.
And he sexual. Obviously is like
way into her.
Way into her and wants to be with her. It really is, and I really like that she put those in there. Because at first I was like, oh man, I really like Alan. There's no way that there's going to be two good guys in this book that she's to choose from.
One Alan's of them always would end asshole. Up being the bad.
Yeah. Right. I thought.
Like, Deadly Alchemy, the first love interest yes. actually turned out to be the mm-hmm. vampire who was, like, trying to kill her.
Yeah. And that's where I thought that was going to end up, and it wasn't.
It didn't. It didn't go there. Seems Alan good. Is a legitimately good guy
yeah.
who just was interested in her, you know, made his play.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, sorry, this isn't how I feel. And, he accepted it and moved on, and he stayed her friend.
Yeah, I thought his true colors were going to come out when he got that phone call.
Hey,
Steve. When he got that phone call towards the end of the book, where they said that they caught a wolf, and then they were going to go investigate to see if this is the wolf that's been killing the townspeople.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, it's a trap. Now I know he's an asshole. Now he's the bad guy, because he took the phone call right in front of her and said the right words in front of her. And so I was like, this is it. Now I have a reason to hate Alan. And he ended up still not being the bad guy, which is fine, obviously. He ends up with the best friend in the end.
Yeah.
So in that whole section of basically her figuring out that there was nothing between her and Alan, the question that I have for you guys is through, you know, in your past, was there ever a time where either, you know, you were attracted to somebody or there was that potential suitor, quote unquote, and then like you guys kissed for the first time, kind of like what happened with her, and there was nothing. Like after she was like, yeah, that was okay. I know it's not there.
Hmm. Yes. Wait, what was the question?
Yes.
Maybe it was somebody that you were attracted to or really into, and then you guys kissed and it wasn't there, or it was somebody who, potential suitor, that, you know, you said, F it, I'll give this dude a shot,
yeah.
And then it happened, then there was the kiss, and you were like, ah, yeah, no, never mind, this is not gonna happen.
Yeah.
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 A couple of episodes, we were talking about crushes, and my longest crush, I ended up dating him for a while, and then I met Julian, and while I was dating my crush, when we were together, I went to prom with Julian just as friends because he had asked me, and I went with him, and there was definitely an attraction there. While we didn't make out or anything, just being around him and holding his hand. Yeah, he's freaking me out because I think he's going to step on my laptop.
Eating your pen is what I wanted you to see.
Kitty cat. We have a cat in our midst, guys.
His name is Steve.
His name is Steve. I definitely felt the attraction and the sparks between me and Julian that obviously I knew that I shouldn't be feeling, but you can't help the way you feel, regardless if you're in a relationship or not. So for me, it was that my spark actually started to fade from my current boyfriend to Julian, who would eventually become my boyfriend. So, yes.
Yeah. I in college, I was, like, into someone that once we gave it a shot, it was like, oh.
Yeah.
No, I don't think there's...
Oh, no.
But it was a little bit more mutual. It was a more, like, we just, you know, hung out one night and made out a bit, and it was just like, oh, that was weird. And not like us. Again, a little bit different because Alan obviously was feeling it and thought it was going to go there for him, and it just wasn't for on Mo's side. So haven't had anything really like that, I don't think.
No. What about you?
There wasn't like, yes is the short answer, but it wasn't like sparks were flying or anything like that. But it was. Me and Peggy, actually.
Uh-huh.
Like, that short little bit that...
Who's one of our listeners, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, one of our five.
But, you know, like, me and her, we had saw each other for a little bit, and I think it was, like, maybe the fourth or fifth time we had hung out, like,
mm-hmm.
together as, like, dating. And I think both of us just kind of came and was like, you know, you're awesome, you know, I love you as a person, but this just isn't...
Sure.
It's not gonna work. I mean, to this day, like, Margaret's still one of my best female friends. Like, she's amazing.
But she's one of mine, too.
Yeah.
I love her. Well, cool. That's a good question. I like this. Keep asking this question. I want to talk more about myself. Speaking of Alan and how he wanted to be with Mo, I have a hard time calling her Mo. She's the most ridiculous name. Mo is her short name. Kalina, read off her name.
Moonflower Freedom Refreshing Breeze Joplin Duval Weinstein.
Her parents are hippies. And that's what they named her. So obviously.
Which is not acceptable.
She goes by Mo. No. And it's funny because Connor is like, this is my girlfriend, Maureen. Connor? Cooper?
You've been calling him Connor all night.
I have been calling him Connor. When I say Connor, I mean Cooper. Introduced her as Mo or Maureen, and she's like, Maureen. Who's Maureen?
He's like, I'm sorry. Her rendition of what he said, I'm sorry. I just assumed. Because that's her man voice during the narration.
Yeah, not well.
It's a much better man voice than her man voice.
So towards the towards the latter part of the book, Mo becomes pregnant with Cooper's baby, and Alan is like still trying to suit her. He doesn't know that she's pregnant quite yet.
Well, Cooper has run away at this point.
That's
and
true.
Has abandoned her, and for like a couple weeks now,
she's been gone.
She's been like sad and moping around town, and Cooper's been gone. So mm-hmm. the whole town knows. Like she slapped him. They stormed off and had a conversation, and then he took off and hasn't been seen since.
Yeah.
So everyone knows he's left and thinks that he's left her.
Yes. So, of course, Alan comes in. He's like, is it bad that I'm coming here with Pisa? I just want to talk. And she wants this feeling. She wants to know that there is somebody that she can come home to that will take care of her and the baby. But then she gives him she has to let him down. For one, she's like, well, dude, I'm pregnant. And he's like, oh, well, I'll take care of you. Just give me a chance. I really, mm-hmm. I really feel like I deserve a chance. And he sort of does. Alan's a really good guy. But she just doesn't feel it. So then he's like, please don't give me the nice guy speech. And she gives him the nice guy speech.
But she also did it in a way that it was, she did it in a way that she was calling him a nice guy, but not doing the, you're a really nice guy, it's just not for me. You know, when he said, don't give me the nice guy speech, she was like, but you are, and you are actually a really nice person. And he was like, oh, thanks. Like, when she reiterated it, it was more of a compliment as opposed to the, oh, here we go again. Here's the nice guy.
The condescending type of, I need an excuse to get away from this relationship, yep, type of thing.
Yep.
She was honest with him. And he, because he is a good person, didn't go fucking ballistic on her.
Mm-hmm.
And reacted in a very good human way.
Very good.
Have you ever, Pete, have you been ever given the nice, clean on your assholes.
I've never gotten the nice guy. I got the nice guy speech a lot. In all honesty, I don't know what it is. Probably I was just annoying. let's be real. but yeah, no, I mean, there were plenty of, you know, we were kids, obviously, like middle school, high school age. But there were plenty of girls then that I was really into, or I, you know, found very attractive, and I would try to make a move and they're like, oh, you're so nice. And you're such a nice guy. I just wouldn't want to ruin that between us. And I'm like, I get it. I got that all the time. Aww. Through high school. Oh, yeah.
I could say, but you know what? You are a nice guy. Those are Toronto's words. Sorry.
I think in what's changed because of that. So here's something, not necessarily societal, but something that we were talking about earlier as far as, you know, things that happen that kind of shape you or whatever, because of all the nice guy stuff that had happened when I was younger and who I'm married to now, it's kind of started to flop a little bit. Like, obviously, I'm not an outward asshole to people because that's just not who I am. But when there was the whole nice guy thing, I always made a conscious effort to not start confrontation, and I swallowed a lot of anger and a lot of all these other things because I'm like, that's just not who I am. So it almost got to the point of the nice guy problem where I was basically a doormat for people. Like, they knew that they would, they'd come in, they could say whatever, they could ask whatever, I would do it because that's who I am and I wouldn't ask for anything.
Right.
So people would walk all over me. Whereas now I'm like, okay, but like there's limitations in the boundaries as far as, you know, I'll give the shirt off my back for you, but there's a limit to where this goes to where I understand that, you're okay, now you're just taking advantage of the situation. Whereas before, that was never the case. It was always just like, oh, well,
you were naked by the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. Like, exactly.
You know, and standing out in the cold.
Exactly.
And didn't shift into a wolf. Like,
just so I'm just a naked, cold little kid. Just like, Jesus.
So I think that's an important piece of the nice guy or the just anything is setting your boundaries so that you're not being walked on, because you can help out people and do, you know, anything for your friends and everything, but at some point there's a certain, like, just respect of yourself where you're just like, look, I have more value than this. Like, I am not here just to serve you and your needs. I have needs too, so and that's important. It's that just takes age and, like, for time. It's hard to learn.
And different people that you meet throughout the relationships you have, whether it's friends or new family members or whatever, it's just you start to discover different pieces of yourself and you learn your limits with them too.
I think I had kind of a similar situation. I don't know, maybe it's a thing word that I just forgot that I wanted to use, but whatever, where, like, I didn't get nice girled or nice guy or whatever, but I was in a lot of relationships where I think I was a crutch and a fix for people. And then once they got fixed, they didn't need me and they moved on. And I heard that a lot.
Yeah.
And so I, like, had to stop and reevaluate the way I am in relationships with guys. And I have to be like, look, you have to be, like, I can't fix you.
Right.
And it's not my job to fix you. And you have to be who you are, the way you are. And if you need to fix yourself, that's on you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I went through a lot of relationships fixing guy after guy who then they got healthy and were like, I can do better. And, like, move on. And I'm like, well, that fucking sucks.
I'm gonna stop. Like,
thanks for those 2 years of effort.
Right.
So, yeah.
But that's, I'm not excusing their behavior behind it or what ultimately ended up doing it. But that's more of the person of who you are. And I'm not saying this in an accusatory way. You're the type of person who, like, you kick somebody in the ass when they need to get kicked in the ass. And a lot of the times when people need that crutch or the help, they're stuck in self-loathing. mm-hmm. or they have this one thing that they hate about themselves, and you're like, shut up, like, get over it, let's move on, let's move forward, like, you're better than this, and they're like, you know what, maybe I am, like, that's more, I think that's more of a testament to who you are. It sucks that those people did that, but that's more of a testament of who you are as far as being able to tell people to get over yeah. themselves and move on and grow and be human beings. Anyway.
Well, you're like a fix-it Felix, so people will go to you to get fixed. But the great thing about that now is, like you just said, you recognize that within yourself now. And before you start a relation, you're like, look, fucker, you and I can have this thing, whatever the fuck it is, but I'm not fixing your ass. Just exactly what you said. And I think mm-hmm. that's so honest and so true and important that you need to learn how to know yourself and love yourself and understand yourself before you can let anybody else do that. Because then they're just gonna nice guy you or fix it Felix you. Yeah. It's stuff. Something interesting I wanted to talk about was, okay, so in this world, there are werewolves, shifters, and we'll address that part of that discussion later, a little bit later. So when she becomes pregnant, she's like, what the fuck am I going to do with a werewolf baby? How do you stay pregnant with a werewolf baby? So she's able to Google and find information about how to be pregnant with a werewolf baby, like legitimate information in a world that doesn't know that these paranormal creatures exist. So it's just really interesting. And I think the most interesting thing is that their gestation period is only 6 months. So not only is she freaking out that she's pregnant and seemingly single because Cooper had run away, but now she only has 6 months to gestate.
Like less, yeah. This, yeah. By the time she puts the math together,
yeah,
she's like five maybe.
Way less. And it's just like, yeah. But towards the end of the book, they get married and then her parents come from Mississippi.
Mississippi.
And they have turned their way. Like, they're not hippie-ish much anymore. And they're more understanding of her.
They're still fully hippie.
They're just not berating her about things. Because okay. They used to be on her case all the time. And now they're like,
that's right.
Hey, honey.
They had the realization that they were so invested in her and her life because she was amazing and wonderful. Like, having the process of having a kid and, like, raising a child yeah. and creating life, it just made them, they were fascinated by her and so interested in her. But they were also afraid that they themselves were boring. And without her, what would they do?
Yeah.
Like, so they had this fear that if she ever left, then they would just look at each other and be like, oh, shit. We're boring people, and do we even like each other anymore? So they had clung to her for so long because it gave them something external to focus on instead of themselves and their relationship. So once she finally left and like ran away and abandoned them, they had to face that, and they realized that they weren't boring people. They were still ridiculous, crazy people, and they were fun. And they just turned their commune into a resort.
Yeah,
the only vegan, fully vegan, organic something or other
that's
in the
cool.
Mississippi area. Or
yeah,
something like that.
So yeah. It's like yeah, and like an ashram to go visit and spend
so
all
cool.
day doing yoga and eating organic rye bread or something.
That was one thing that I really liked, actually. Again, with the whole, like, training wheels aspect of this book, that was one thing that I liked as far as getting into the whole, like, paranormal slash fantasy type deal is they placed it in the modern world as opposed to some, you know, so she was talking about Googling or buying $400 worth of whatever.
La Perla.
La Perla. But then also when she went on her whole, like, pregnancy kick, they were talking about how she bought... Or no, when she was trying to figure out about werewolves, she bought like $400 worth of books on like werewolves that
yeah.
she found in some book, like odd name bookstore
mm-hmm.
and
oh,
had to pay
true, yeah.
like $200 in shipping or
yep.
something like that to get them there. So I thought that was kind of cool just as far as how they made it modern world type deal. And the other thing that with the whole Googling the gestation period, the answer to me was so dumb. Like it was funny, but I was just like, really? That was the best you got? Whereas like, well, wolves are 3 months gestation and humans are 9, so you figure we'll just meet in the middle and make it 6, so there you go.
She's like, I just need a filler for this part.
That was pretty much what, I think they even said it in the book, like that was the explanation that she found on
yeah.
that
was exactly it.
That was
yeah.
exactly it.
Yeah, it's
three
just...
3 and 9 and the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Split the difference.
Just meet in the middle, there
yeah.
you go, you got 6 months, good luck.
I just, it's just such a weird thing. I wasn't pregnant any more than 6 months, but I was the horniest pregnant person. So now that her parents are going to be staying with them for the next 2 months, I feel bad. If she was anything like me, I don't know, you're going to fuck. I don't.
Well, in there, her mom did walk in on her, and she was like, and then she was just sitting there just like, oh, and how's it going? And what's going on with this? And mom, get out.
She's extolling the benefits of tantric sex.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
That is
all
awesome.
For it.
So she'll be fine with it.
Totally.
That's awesome.
I think that as much as her parents think that they're going to stay with Mo and Cooper,
yeah.
I think Mo's going to put her foot down and be like, no, you can stay in the hotel down the road.
Yeah. You can stay in Susie Q's house.
Because there's no way.
There's no one there anymore.
Well, okay, we don't have to go there. But yeah, I was just going to say, there's just no way she's going to have her parents in her house with her for 2 months.
I went morbid with that.
You did.
Hey, so I'm changing subjects because that's why I'm hard left. So part of the reasons we do this podcast is to talk about paranormal and the sexual aspects of the book. You got some real training wheels here.
Right.
So she used really gentle terms in comparison to what we normally, she says length and we get cock. And she says shaft and we get pussy in all these other books.
Right, for sure.
How did you feel about that?
The very first, so I came into this going, all right, I'll listen to this and we'll just see how it goes or whatever. But I never thought like anything would actually like hit, you know, where it's just like, okay, well, I read the book. It was a decent book and that was done. That first sex scene, I was like, oh, I get it. Like, oh,
That's what's happening.
Yeah, it was totally like, I get it. I'm on it. Like, and then the other two, they weren't as good. Like, there were more, I think there was actually a total of 4 or 5. But the other ones, it was more of just like, he ripped my pants and this, that, and the other. And then it was done. And okay, now we're moving on to something else type deal. And he marked me. But that first one, I was like, no, that's there. I get it.
I think that was a really good first sex scene.
It was a hot scene.
It wasn't graphically detailed like we normally get.
But it was different descriptors than normal. Mm-hmm. And she took control.
Yeah.
This is something I really appreciated, like, for the book, for Molly to write and for Mo to be, is unlike a lot of our female leads, she was not a virgin, a near virgin, or a shrinking violent in any way.
Yeah.
She knew who she was. I think part of it was growing up in a very sexually open environment with her parents being hippies, and they just never made a deal about it. Sex was natural. It wasn't something to be ashamed about. So she didn't have all of that, like, shame. She didn't even go to school until high school. So she didn't grow up with typical societal issues.
She's pretty normal for not being normal.
She got some of the benefits of not living in our weird society, or living in a particularly weird, different society than our culturally standard one. So she, you know, had bought a box of, like, the super pack of condoms I'm assuming it was a Costco or a Sam's. They just bulk warehoused or whatever. But I figure one of those places.
Bulk Wonderland, I think is what you call it.
Yeah. So, you know, she was prepared. She had experience. She knew what she wanted. She was like, she kept seeing if she was going to end up having sex with Alan, but it didn't ever work out for her. She kind of knew it was always going to be Cooper. Like, literally the day that she met Cooper, she's like, this is exactly the kind of guy I'm going to have sex with. Like, this is like, what's going to happen.
Yep.
It's verified he's an asshole. We're totally sleeping together.
Yep.
And, you know, they come back. There was a party and she was in a sexy red dress. And she actually went home alone. And then he, like, followed her home. Like, he ran in as a werewolf.
Yes.
And, like, stormed her house.
Yes.
And, like, tore her clothes off. And she was still like, she was excited and everything. Mm-hmm. But she then took control of the situation.
Yeah.
She didn't just, she was like, well, I don't know if he's going to just do, you know, that one move that dogs are known
for. She, She did say that. She was like, never mind.
And she, like, flipped him and hooked her leg under him so he couldn't change positions. And she had power in that situation.
Yeah.
And she's like, we're going to do this my way. And I thought that was a really good sexy. Because she was. She went and got the condoms and she had it all planned and she, you know, did it her way. She got herself hers first.
She had full control of the situation and he was all for it.
Yeah.
Totally. And I think maybe this is TMI for the group, but whatever.
No, we're not at the table right now.
That's totally, I think, the thing about that scene that I was like, hey, because it's one of those things, like, as being in the situation and where I am, you know, with the only income and being, like, the alpha of the house and being the dad and decision makers and stuff like that, there are times where I just want to be able to lay back and be like, go to town. Yeah, you know, where I have, I lose all control. It's all on them. You do what you got to do. I'm just going to be the bystander who enjoys whatever the hell it is that you feel like doing. Mm-hmm. So I think that was definitely a part of it where, and then even when like Cooper was like, how'd you learn to do that balance thing? And she was like, I've done years of yoga. That was nothing. But it was just, you know, it was that whole thing of just like, I think that's what actually got it, was just like, she was on it. She was like, nope, I'm doing this my way because this is the way I want it.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's a woman who understands her body, knows what she wants and what she needs and how to achieve those, mm-hmm. how to get to the goal, mm-hmm. you know? And so like, that's always good. I just thought it was just, I know surprise sex doesn't sound like a really good answer to things because surprise sex sounds rapey.
I was going to say,
it's like, you know, it's that, when he like rushed in and he just like took her. It's mm-hmm. just so hot, obviously with consent. And then the clothes ripping off and then he just.
Well, yeah, I mean, they had at least a couple sentences.
Before, oh, did you know, they talk?
Yes. Because remember when she left. She said, like, look, you don't want me. Like, why are you messing with me?
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, I never said I didn't want you. Mm-hmm. And then she, like, left the party. And when he came over, he's like, I don't like having to repeat myself. And she's like, so you want me? And she made him say it a couple times. So I think that implied that as the consent.
Dialogue
there. There was a little bit. Otherwise, she would have slammed the door. And
sure. You know, so, I forgot.
But yeah. No, that. You're like, it was passionate.
It was.
Because it was like, she'd been having a tepid relationship with Alan that was not doing it for her.
Yeah.
She was not physically attracted. Him the way she wanted to be. Mm-hmm. He didn't get her hot. And then, but Cooper did the whole time, like from the beginning, but she thought he was an asshole and she thought he hated her because he was so mean to her all the time. And then it took, you know, him being like, I never said I didn't want you. I'm just trying to avoid you. And then he just storms in. And so there is, that's like passion. And it's like,
it's hot.
It's so sexy.
Okay. Have you ever had that moment? Or have you ever done that moment? Like, has that ever happened to you in any of your experiences? Or have you done that? Because it could be the reverse. You can go on and storm somebody and be like, hey, let's fuck. But not. But not say it. Just do it.
I'm trying to think.
I don't think as emphatic as this scene was written, sure. or as, you know, but the night, the guy who I'm currently with, mm-hmm. when it was just like, look. like I put it out there all night long. I was just like, this is serious. I'm like giving you all of the green signals and all the goes. Mm-hmm. And then finally, like in the end of the evening, I was just like, I'm going to now physically jump up. Like, that's what it takes. Just to really seal that in your mind that this is what did.
Oh, that's cool.
So I would say that probably happened to me at least once in the past before where somebody was sending signals, me being mostly oblivious to almost everything. I'm just like, derp, derp.
Word.
and it came to basically like that where she was like, okay, come here. And I'm like, oh, that's what this was. Oh, okay. Awesome.
That's what those meant. Little taps meant. I don't know if that's... I mean, sometimes it's surprising when you're getting woken out of your sleep from, you know, like if you're just like, I'm sleeping. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, it's happening.
That's never happened to me.
No.
One day it will.
Someday.
Someday it will.
See, I'm never asleep.
The best thing is when you guys are asleep and then you both wake up at the same time, but you're still really groggy. And then you just start brushing up against each other and then body parts start grinding. You know, I know guys just have boners, especially in sleep. So you just have a boner. That's like my favorite. When I roll over... Is it too TMI for you because it's your brother?
No.
Okay, because I know you... I mean...
No, it's not.
We can disassociate, right? I can call him George, if you'd like.
Talk it.
George is not a sexy name.
No, it's not. Sorry, George.
Sorry, George. But, like, if I turn over and he's still asleep, but he's got, like, full-on readiness, then I'm like, yes, this is good. And then you just take full advantage. So I either go down, or I stay up, or I, like, hit him in the face with my tits, which I love to do. I'm sharing that news with everybody right now. I crawl on top of Van and I smack him in the face with my boobs. I don't have much there, but I'm just like,
I sorry. That's amazing. What?
And I do. I smack him. Fun stuff.
I was gonna say, like, the waking up and immediately going, that's definitely happened, but like being woken up by the act.
No?
No.
You've never woken up to like a blowy?
No. If I have, it's not. It
didn't stick in your brain.
I'll tell you what, it truly only works, and I only like to do it if he already has a hard on. I don't want to have to work up to his hard on. I'm lazy. I'm asleep too.
But
can you just meet me halfway and have a boner right now so that I can work with you?
But let's be real, he's a Hemingway, so it doesn't take much.
I just like scratch his arm, draw some blood. Come on, Kalina, some deep dark secret in there is.
I feel like I've shared a lot. No, morning, like, yeah, surprise morning sex is not. You can't surprise me because I've probably been awake, especially current relationship. I've been awake for like 6 hours before his ass rolls out of bed.
Yeah.
And I feel like it would just be rude for me to get anyone else up at 6. That's not nice.
No, you're very.
On like his one day off, like, you're right. Hey, you should get up now.
I know. You're nice. But if it's like every once in a while, wake up in the morning like dead out of your sleep thing where I'm pleasuring him, not once has he ever complained about that, even if he has to get up 2 hours later.
I definitely would be like, all right, this is a thing, let's do this.
Let's do this. It's nice. So we've kind of done it sporadically throughout this recording about maybe like certain, obviously, personal stories and kiss and tells and stuff. But we thought it would be fun in this episode to have our guest give us a kiss and tell, whether or not it's relatable to the book. So, Pete, do you got something for us?
It does relate to the book. Car sex is awkward.
Especially when you're 6'2".
Yeah. So,
we don't have that problem.
So, I've only had sex in cars twice. The very first time was in my very first car. Very tiny. It was a 98 Ford. The front seats I had to have all the way back just to even drive the thing. And so that left very little room in the back of the car. And it was me and my longest girlfriend at that time before me and my wife met. And we had sex in the back of that car. And it was by far one of the most uncomfortable things I had ever experienced. I'm pretty sure at one point we had moved or shifted or slipped. And I damn near remember getting like the buckle part of the seatbelt like in my ass while I was doing stuff. Like, it was not fun. Pretty sure my ribs cramped up a couple of different times from, like, happened to be, like, in a... It sucks. Second time was with... Totally is going to be TMI, but whatever. Current wife up to Washington, I think our first trip in the back of the Ford Explorer. But that was a lot more comfortable because it was a SUV and there was whatever. And she, I think, was 2 or 3 months pregnant at the time. And it was on the way up on a night trip up to Washington. And both of us were like,
why not? Wanna?
So we like pulled into a rest stop, the first one that we saw. And
do this.
Hey, Ford Explorer, fun time. But other than that, it's mainly uncomfortable. Like, car sex is not fun. It's not what, like, any movie you see, it's like, oh, that looks like, even in the book, they were talking about it where it was like, she like, which I appreciated in the book because she like threw her head back at one point and like hit the windshield.
Yeah.
Totally, though. That's car sex to a T.
And I was very concerned at that moment because she literally just had a concussion earlier, like 2 hours earlier, because Cooper's sister punched her and knocked her out.
Right.
And so now she is bashing her head on windshields and shit. And I'm like, dude, you gotta be careful.
Check her pupils.
She's got a brain injury. Well, also, like, she's being pressed against the steering wheel, right. But there's no honking. Right. Oh, please. Right. You hit that steering wheel.
Unless she has negative ass, there's definitely horn honking going on.
Maybe they have the horns that's just the two little buttons on the
or
side.
My car, which no longer has a horn that's since the true. Accident. There you go. And somebody refuses to fix it.
I'll give you a surprise blowy if you go fix the horn on my car.
I might get my
obviously, I think it would be your sitting and the girl straddling you. It just makes
like makes way more sense
you
than
just,
any other
you
potential.
Can, you can't fit in any carpet. You're just and your brother is not as tall as you. He's 5'10", but he couldn't, like, we fucked in the Scion. That's not a big-ass car.
No.
But
it's at least a boxing car. It's got a high ceiling.
It does have a high ceiling. And if we wanted to, you could, the cool Scions are fucking awesome. You can lay the seats completely back so that they connect with each other and it's a flat surface. Mm-hmm. It's really awesome. They're the best drive-in cars.
In the Jeep. Yeah. I can do that in the Jeep. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think we've ever done anything in the Highlander, mainly because it was like, we bought that because we were starting a
family. It always has.
Right. Yeah.
Car seats. That's way too much work at that
way
point.
Too much. No way. Let's just wait till we get home. Yeah, I've done it in a Subaru. I've done it in a Daihatsu. Yeah, what the fuck is that? Exactly. Jetta. Yeah.
Nissan Altima. Backseat. Nissan Altima. Mm-hmm. It's not a real comfortable position. The ceiling's kind of low. So if you do the standard position of him sitting and you on top.
Yeah.
But now your head's real close to the ceiling.
Yeah.
Even as a short person.
Yes.
There's just not that much room in cars.
Yeah. Really
they're not great.
No. So that was a fun one.
Yeah.
And it was relatable to the book. So at this point, we generally put in our fun fuck facts.
Fun facts. So we had... That's good. We need that.
And we that was awesome.
Neither of us know how to do that. No.
But now I can take that piece of it and stick it in all of our recordings.
Peter's air horn is now part of our podcast from now on. So we were having a discussion about Cooper calls himself a werewolf, his whole clan call themselves werewolves, and Stella and I were talking about how typically you think, like, you hear werewolf and you think, like, the old monster movies, mm-hmm. Lupin from Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. You think the full moon turn into an uncontrollable monster.
Yes.
Versus really how they're described in this book and most of our fantasy or paranormal romances as just humans who turn into wolves occasionally. Right. Mm-hmm. So we decided to look it up and give you a little bit of werewolf background. So werewolf is an old English word that means man-wolf. So basically the prefix were just means man. So that's why in some novels, some of the, like, Sookie Stackhouse, the True Blood novels, there are were-jaguars and were-tigers and everything were just means a human who can shift into another animal, and then the animal's tacked on.
So it's
in pop culture, tends to be those scary monsters that, you know, it's changing now. I mean, Twilight, we got Jacob and the werewolf clan and all of this. So things are starting to change. Werewolves are becoming more mainstream, adorable, and not scary.
Yeah.
But so are vampires. And so are all of our creatures.
So are, yeah.
But, yeah, so that's kind of like that. No, it's not. I think we have to go back to Anne Rice if we're going to blame anyone.
Yeah,
but
right.
She started this. In pop culture, it seems to be shifters are the people who turn into animals and werewolves are scary, but really, were just means person.
Okay.
So anything can be a were. Didn't somebody mention? No. Was that in this book?
Yeah. When she was Googling different stuff about werewolves, she was like, and apparently there's all kinds of were communities. There's were skunks, were squirrels, were... Yeah.
Remember we talked about were chipmunks at one point?
We did.
I think, yeah. I can't remember how many she brought up, but yeah.
Yeah.
Were skunks is one of them, and I was like, man, that's a fucking thing to shift into.
I'd be very, very upset to shift it to a skunk.
Right.
I feel like that's not what you'd want for your life. But, you know. So, yeah, that's... I mean, it was a short, fun fuck fact. And it really wasn't a fuck fact. It was just a fun fact about...
It was a fun fact. Where, what's your source on that?
Wikipedia, okay. Where everything comes from. So, nice. If I'm wrong, so are all of you assholes. Because that's Wikipedia. Oh, you mean you look
up reliable sources? Hey!
Yep. We definitely always source things, and we never are wrong about anything.
Ever.
Ever that we
source. We're never wrong. Ooh, I got up close to that part. So, let's rate real quick, and then we'll do some ending stuff. Yes, we need to rate it. And then, Pete, we're going to ask you to give us your last words.
Okay.
Your very last
words. Oh, no.
You didn't know that part of the podcast.
Yeah. Unless you go to iTunes and rate us really high, then we'll let you live.
We do need more.
We only have one rating in iTunes.
Somebody, please.
Just give us a chance. All right, so here's our rating scale, Pete.
Sorry, Steve's being an asshole.
You're good.
Steve? So, we kind of like to do... He sits on men's laps
because he's a sexist cat.
He is. No. It's because they have bigger laps. So, the way we do our rating scale is we rate the book as a whole. So, plot, storyline, and characters and all of that. And then we rate just the sexiness.
Okay.
Because we found that sometimes books are real sexy and we hate them.
Yeah, hence
or sometimes we really like books that have zero sex with them and we're like, God damn it.
Zero sex. That happens. It has happened.
It has happened. Okay. And we're also, we feel betrayed by the book. Somehow it ended up in the romance genre and it shouldn't be.
Totally.
So overall, right, we give an overall rating, yeah. Right? Uh-huh. That's what it was. I think overall, it was a... easy listen. I mean, it would have been an easy read. There doesn't really hang up on anything. So I would say, as far as a good read, I would give it like 7 or 8.
Okay.
It's a decently short story, not like too long.
You can give decimals.
Oh, like, okay. Then it would probably be like a 7.5, maybe even an 8. Just because it's a really easy read. You don't get bored. They don't drag on about stuff that you just don't care about. So I think an overall rating of the book would be 7.5. To an 8, somewhere right around in there. As far as the sexiness rating, I would probably give it, as a newbie into this, I would probably give it a 5. And the only reason why I'm saying, which that's a coochie twinge, for everybody who doesn't know.
How is that coochie twinge, Pete?
So the reason I would give it a coochie twinge is because... that first scene got me, and I was like, oh, totally get it. And then the rest of them, I was like, okay. Like, it just didn't do much for me. But that first one got me, which I wasn't expecting at all. So that's why, because the other ones didn't deliver throughout the book, which I think there was a total of 5 of them, I'll give it a 5 or a coochie twinge.
Right on.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty close. I would agree on the book and giving it a toe-curling super squishy. Rating about 7.5. I do like that first scene a lot. For me, it was toe curling, so I can give it a 7. Obviously, we've had, you know, way more detailed sex scenes in the previous books that we've read, but...
yeah. But sometimes, like, yeah, there's sometimes where they're very detailed, and sometimes... like, I feel like there was enough evoked in these...
yeah.
...to warrant, I think, probably a 6 on the sex. So that it was sizzling. There was heat between Cooper and Mo. And yeah, that first scene is very well done. I flagged it. It will be in rotation. It's a good scene. Overall, it's a good book. I think it's the first in a series, but it doesn't leave you feeling like, now I have to listen to the rest of this series. Like, sometimes it's very obvious that we start a series and we're like, fuck.
Yeah.
Now we're in for the rest of these books, whereas I literally don't know what else they're going to do in the, like, what this could be the first of a series in.
Right. But I mean, we didn't even talk on it.
No.
We didn't even touch on how this book ended, what, like, the premise of it was.
I think there's 2 or 3 more. Okay. I think they just pop. When I finished that one, it was like,
yeah, well, what comes up on Audible? Yeah. The next one is how to something with another something.
Oh, how to something with another something.
I think it's how to seduce your naked werewolf or something like that.
Yeah, something like
so
that.
So it's just them. It's a continuation of their story, probably.
Yeah. Oh. Maybe.
Because it could obviously could be like the pack or anybody else. Sure. Samson or somebody.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter because it doesn't. I did like that because it did feel like there's a formula to a lot of our books where it's like, here's a group of five men
yeah.
that are warriors of some sort that hang out together, and one of them finds his soulmate, and that's the whole book one, and book two is the second one, and book three mm-hmm. is the... I mean, it's a very formulaic, yeah. very standard, like, this is just how we're going to go until all five of them are mated for life with their pairs. And you know exactly how these books go. When this is a little bit different, so I think that that was interesting. Love, you know, the writing of the town and the people. We did not discuss, I did have small issues with the ending and how it all rounded. There was a little bit of shoehorning of an action plot into yeah. this that didn't really fit with the rest of the story. It just kind of like was tacked on and there then needed resolved to be an very quickly.
Yeah. Of some sort. And yeah.
And there wasn't. And then all of a sudden there was one and it got yeah. ended real fast and it didn't make a lot of sense. I thought there was room for an alternative antagonist that I had thought was going to happen all book and it
which
didn't.
Then could have led on to.
It gives you a whole lot of places to go in the yeah. future, right. but that's fine. I don't begrudge Molly for this. I don't
sure,
think
no,
was,
this
like,
is...
I don't want to be negative about it. Like...
Well, and even that, even if this is a series, like, this is one of those ones where you could pick it up, you could read that whole one, and if you didn't want to read the series,
yeah,
it was a decent yeah. enough story in and of itself. It didn't really leave
right.
no.
a ton of holes.
We literally have no idea what happened in Dark Fever. None whatsoever.
None.
Because you have to read the whole series to understand it, and I'm not going to commit that much time.
No.
So see books like that.
Yeah.
This was a standalone. Again, I think you guys are both like real right, 7 to 8
yeah.
on the book itself. I would go with a 6 on the sex scenes.
So we're in between.
They're pretty, they're fun. Yes, they aren't explicit. They're tame language and tame descriptions, but they still evoke feelings and
yeah.
ideas in your brain. Then
mm-hmm.
someday you think, hey, I know yoga, and then you don't. It's bad. That's well, how you get hurt.
So, Pete, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed this.
Yeah, we'll definitely find a different book, try to find one that's like real sizzling.
Go from training wheels to
a
BMX
motorcycle.
Bike.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like downhill, like rocket scooter. Here you go.
No
go
helmet.
For it.
None. No protective gear. So, I mean, if anybody out there has any suggestion that you really want to flip Peter's panties, then let us know. because I think that'll be good, and we would love to have you back on the show. Any closing words? Anything you want to say? Anything you want to give us money? You want to give us
promote yourself or your
none.
Store?
Yeah, so we could do that. My wife and myself, we run a... It's basically like an imaging shop. We do sublimations on mugs, shirts.
Okay, no one knows what sublimation is.
Sublimation is basically, it's a special type of ink that you print on a piece of paper that you heat press, and it basically instantly dyes whatever subject it's on. You know, it takes special types of materials and whatnot, but pretty much any design or anything that we can think of.
Personalized gifts.
Yeah, personalized gifts. We can... create them, and we also do jewelry, earrings and necklaces. We do, I mean, you name it. There's all kinds of stuff that's out there. If you just look for Mason and Andy on Facebook, you will find our shop. And also you can look for masonandandy.com, which will link you to our Etsy page. And I think Shelby's even made some stuff for
yeah,
absolutely.
You
and,
we have
and
fantastic
yes,
items from,
we have
from Shelby.
So much fun stuff that she's made for Sturdy Books. We have posted that on our website. She shares the shit out of our stuff, and whenever she makes some of our stuff for us.
Andy, A-N-D-E.
I was just going to say
E-E. A-N-D-E-E. Yeah, two
E's on Andy.
So Mason yep. and Andy, A-N-D-E-E.
Yep. yep.
Did I say three E's? Don't
totally
do three E's.
You totally did, but that's
cause,
okay.
Because I do that with
we
our
have three H's.
And our H's.
E-E-E.
Anyway, yeah. Two E's. Mason and Andy. Yes.
And yeah,
it's amazing stuff. She does
good
great
stuff,
work.
Good stuff.
And we, yeah, we love it. And you could tell her to make you... Sturdy Books things.
You know, you
and you can buy it. It'd be awesome.
And yep. I mean, literally, like, we have tote bags that, like, have the word fuck written on it and, like, this intricate.
It is deep.
So, I mean, like, literally anything.
I have a coffee mug with a panda bear that says fuck off on it. So it's pretty
it.
Damn great.
So good.
Good stuff.
Yeah. So, well, thanks for listening. As always, you can find us on most social media. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at shdirtybooks, and that's with three H's. Or you can email us at gmail.com, shdirtybooks@gmail.com. I don't know why I said that. Sorry.
Happens. That's all right. I can never get mine right. And mine is visit us on our website at shdirtybooks.com and SoundCloud, iTunes,
Google Podcasts. Please rate us and review us on iTunes. Apparently that's the only thing that really matters. Great. Like, literally no other platform matters.
No, you have to do iTunes. Just
iTunes.
Yeah.
And some of us aren't even Apple people, and it's real frustrating.
Yeah.
We want to thank Jim Townsend for our intro and outro music. It's wonderful, and thanks a lot for that. And we will see you in 2 weeks.
Next book. Next book. I know, that was a beautiful ending. That was
the best ending we've ever had.
It was so flawless. And we fuck up.
We even remember Jim. All right, next week, or next time. First Grave on the Right by Dorinda Jones.
Yes.
So yeah, come back for that, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
All right, thank you again.
Bye. Yeah, you've been listening to Reading Dirty Books with Galena and Saylet. Be sure to tune into the next episode for some more of your dirty books read to you. And if you're listening on a format that allows you to give a rating, please do that for them.